I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday at the Movies.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
He's looking at you, kid.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Members of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences have voted, and later this month, we'll find out who this year's Oscar winners are. Today, we'll find out who Washington Post film critic Anne Hornaday and Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival are rooting for. It's not an Oscars-so-white year for nominees, but will any black filmmakers actually win anything? And Jed gives us a report on last month's Sundance Film Festival. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick has her weekly theater review. The Midday Monthly Movie Mayhem gets rolling right after the news. Hooray for Hollywood, indeed. It's the monthly Midday Movie Mayhem. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you are joining us for this edition of Midday with the movie mavens Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Anne Hornaday, the film critic for the Washington Post. Good to see you guys.
Hello. Good to see you.
How are you?
So, folks, you're probably thinking, you know, the Oscars are coming up. February 26th, Sunday night, Jimmy Kimmel hosting on ABC television. National broadcast, big red carpet event. However, our listeners, as I'm sure you two are well familiar, are busy people.
Yeah,
they got stuff to do. They got a place to go, eggs to lay. You know, they can't sit around watch an award show. It's their bowling night. They've got, you know, they've got that sweater. They've got a knit. They've got a lot of people knitting hats these days, I understand. A lot
pink
of
ones
people.
With ears.
Pink hats. So, you know, it's just not going to be possible.
It's too much.
It is. It's too much. And keep in mind, there are, I don't know, probably a dozen people listening to the program at this point. Those 12 people are busy. They don't have time to watch the awards show. So I'm telling you 12 people, you're in luck.
Yeah. Gather ye round.
Gather ye round, because Jed and Anne are here simply to tell us who's going to win. So you don't have to watch. You don't have to wait until the 26th of February. You can have instant gratification courtesy of the Midday Movie Mayhem.
No offense. We might be down to 8 listeners.
Well, it's still better than yesterday when we were at 6. So so we are going to handicap the Oscars. I like doing this every year. This is always fun. And we're also going to have a little report on, Jen, let's start with that, some local film artists and some film artists associated with the Maryland Film Festival who were featured at Sundance. And you just got back from Utah at the Sundance Film Festival, which you attend every year. So what's going on over there?
It was sort of amazing gathering this year. It always is to some degree, but especially given where we are in our cultural life. You know, it started just before the inauguration. There was a women's march at Sundance that took up all of Main Street in Park City, Utah. And the selection, which I thought was incredibly strong, great energy in the independent film world, also had a variety of political themes all the way through it. And that's interesting because obviously these movies were started long before the upheaval we've seen this year. I mean,
a lot of them started before Trump even announced he was running.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And he was a surprise all the way through, right? I mean, many
although
people.
We should say, for the record, that he started talking about running in 1987. Yeah,
right.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's not like it was a huge surprise to some folks.
Yeah, but the
but
level.
The filmmakers weren't sitting around thinking about that.
Well, and the level of seriousness of it was surprising everybody. I mean, the Republican Party first and then the nation, right? So that was very interesting. And it's sort of a reminder that the independent film community in its broadest sense worldwide, I think, really does reflect something that's going on in the culture. And you may not see it until the films get completed and are shown, but there it is. You know, and you start to see trends that you are sort of amazed that they exist.
Now, are these politically themed movies that are both documentaries and narrative fiction?
Yes, and some very directly political. There was a, you know, for instance, a film about a 10-year sequel to a very big hit documentary film around Al Gore's climate change passion. The original one called Inconvenient Truth, which won the Academy Award, and this one now called An Inconvenient Sequel. And it turns out to be a wonderful tribute to a guy, whatever you think about him as a politician and about the issue, it is a real tribute to a guy who has spent his life in public service and in political advocacy, and he sort of gets it, you know, that it's a roller coaster ride. You go up and down, and you fight hard for what you believe in, and so that turns out to be great. But there were also films.
Well, before we move on to the other films, we have a little clip from an inconvenient sequel, Truth to Power.
10 years ago, when the movie An Inconvenient Truth came out, the single most criticized scene in that movie was an animated scene showing that the combination of sea level rise and storm surge would put the ocean water into the 9/11 memorial site, which was then under construction. And people said, that's ridiculous. What a terrible exaggeration.
There is a wake-up call here, and that is climate change and our vulnerability to it. It was true 10 years ago, it was true 5 years ago, it is undeniable today.
A clip from An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power. That's former Vice President Al Gore, of course.
And so the visual of that was water pouring into the site.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were films that were much less directly political, like there was a wonderful documentary called Quest, which is about a family in North Philly who have, you know, he delivers newspapers, he's called Quest, and then his wife, Ma Quest. They're sort of neighborhood leaders, and he runs a recording studio with hip-hop artists, some of whom I think have really gotten some traction, but many of whom are just neighborhood kids who have this notion, and he's a community outreach center, and nobody asked him to do this, nobody's paying him to do this. He's just a leader in his community, and you can see the impact he's had. So there are many other examples, but they were very interesting fiction and nonfiction films about being an activist in your community and participating in life and getting things done. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, are you hearing any word on the street among folks in the film community? Do you want to hazard a guess as to whether or not the political upheaval and the election of Mr. Trump will, you know, will in some way influence and inform the direction of the subject matter and the way people are going to be making movies over the next 4 to 8 years?
Well, that's the big question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Jed probably has since he was in Park City and talking to these filmmakers, he might have a better sense of what they're all. I mean, such a lot of concern has been so palpable out of the entertainment community just in the award speeches so far this year. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to obviously see a lot of it at the Oscars, mm-hmm. I'm sure. And so it stands to reason that people are going to be motivated and impassioned to turn that energy into some creative work. So, even Mike, of all people, I think the first person to respond to it is Michael Bay, which you could argue we're living in a Michael Bay movie at the
so
moment.
So who's Michael Bay?
He's the big action director who does Transformers, and he just did the 13 Hours in Benghazi. I mean, he's very prone to kind of adrenaline-fueled, hyperbolic, kind of catastrophic
blowing up
action.
Lots of stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, apparently he just signed on to do this kind of dystopian political allegory that's very much rooted in our present moment. So it'll be very interesting to see how this energy gets transmuted into creative work.
And I would say it's already interesting. The awards, what Anne said is right, the award ceremonies there has been many political statements made on the red carpet and during the award ceremonies themselves. Up until very, very recently, that kind of thing was controversial. I mean, I remember Vanessa Redgrave getting booed at the Academy Awards for being political. Michael Moore getting booed protesting Bush 2 Iraq War. And this is not controversial inside the community. And I think it's something different. It isn't just complaining. It's sort of, let's get to work. Let's do what we do as artists and help. Mm-hmm. And we'll see where it goes. We don't quite know yet.
And because as you mentioned, I mean, making movies takes a long time. So there is a certain lag between historical events and the movies that get made after them. There's a movie that I've heard about called Whose Streets, which I guess, Ann, this is about Ferguson. And it's put together. It's interesting the way these movies are being put together. I guess this is gathered home movies. You know, like individual people, Jed, is that right? I
mean, that is right. And it's
was that at Sundance?
That was at Sundance, And so again, a very direct political movie, but fascinating because, of course, after Michael Brown was killed in Ferguson, there was not anything remotely like a political protest. People were angry and hurt and went to the streets in that neighborhood. And then there was a police reaction to that because there was some fear that it was getting out of control. And what the movie shows you is this thing that didn't start with any political thought or action at its core really became what demonstrations often can in political dialogue that leads to political dialogue. And now the Black Lives Matter movement came out of this, and there are people from the streets and the police talking to each other in Ferguson in an ongoing dialogue right now.
Before we talk about Oscars and your picks, et cetera, I want to talk very briefly about a movie that's opening tomorrow here in Baltimore that's gotten a lot of buzz called I Am Not Your Negro. Mm. It's about James Baldwin. We have a little clip from that movie, and you should be aware that there is some strong language in this little clip.
The future of the Negro in this country is precisely as bright or as dark as the future of the country. It is entirely up to the American people whether or not they're going to try to find out in their own hearts why it was necessary to have a nigger in the first place. Because I'm not a nigger. I'm a man. But if you think I'm a nigger, it means you need him. And you got to find out why. And the future of the country depends on that.
James Baldwin in 1965. Mm. So it was just a couple years later, 3 years later, in which people walking on the streets of Memphis, Tennessee with signs that said, I am a man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's the prescience of this, the relevance and the way it resonates now is really quite striking, isn't it?
It's extraordinary. This is I urge everyone listening to go see this. It's just a visually, formally beautiful film for one thing. It's been nominated for an Oscar. It's up for Best Documentary at the Oscars. And it's premised on this essay that Baldwin wrote. It was actually a letter to his literary agent that he wrote in 79 proposing a book where he's grappling with his own personal memoir, his own personal past, his friendships with Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King Jr., and Malcolm X and their murders. And then this sort of overarching critique of white American culture and its blindness and amnesia in the case of slavery and Jim Crow and present-day racism and white supremacy. And what the filmmaker Raoul Peck has done, Samuel L. Jackson reads from the actual letter, which is a stirring, beautiful piece of work. I think it was about 30 pages long. He was still working on it when he died. And then they, you know, he intercuts this footage of Baldwin's appearances on talk shows and on the speaking circuit, which are so electrifying, and then intercuts it with present day footage of Ferguson and other Black Lives Matter demonstrations. So it's just this, it just turns into this incredibly urgent, it's just this beautiful time capsule on the one hand of a time of our intellectual life when someone like a James Baldwin could go on Dick Cavett and was considered entertaining enough to be prime time material, but then also just this urgent kind of diagnosis of our present moment. It's just stunning.
Yeah, to imagine Jimmy Fallon booking a guest like James Baldwin now is just absurd, isn't
it? And getting them to, you know, to engage in dialogue rather than, you know, karaoke or something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And it shows how important, you know, talking about race is difficult. I think we, you know, in our country for sure, but probably everywhere. And
if it isn't difficult, it ain't really talking about race.
I think that's true too. And you and James Baldwin, right now we've got Ta-Nehisi Coates. There are every once in a while somebody emerges who just has the skill, both literary skill and the insight to help the dialogue along. And this film...
And I would say moral courage.
Also true. Also true.
Yeah.
And this film is so beautifully constructed that it opens at the Charles tomorrow. So please go see it. It's really fantastic.
So we're going to take a little break. Then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about some prognosticating about the awards at the end of the month. But you wrote an interesting piece in the Post a couple days ago about the difference or lack thereof between popular movies and movies that are nominated for Oscars.
Yes.
That's kind of an interesting thing. And I also heard that somebody suggested, it might have been you, I can't remember now, that the length of some of these movies determines whether or not they get nominated.
Oh.
And that there are filmmakers who think if they don't make a movie that's 2 hours or 2.5 hours long, like Fences is about 2.5 hours long, that if you make a 90-minute movie...
Of course, August Wilson was going for the Oscar back then when he wrote the play.
Yeah, well, right. But you know, that a 90-minute movie is going to be considered somehow too, you know...
Trivial.
Yeah.
I've never heard that. I'll have to look into that. You know what they say, Tom? Amateurs borrow, professionals steal.
I
will take that idea and run with it and call it my own. Goes, yes, exactly.
But I mean, it's interesting which ones make a lot of money at the box office, which ones get nominated. They're not always the same ones, but sometimes they are.
That's true. And for years, there has been kind of this ding on the Oscars as being elitist, and it's all about movies that we haven't seen, quote unquote, and that's why they expanded the Best Picture category was sort of, I think, to include maybe more blockbusters, like maybe get in a Dark Knight Rises in there or a Lord of the Rings or something like that. And this year, that argument has taken on an even more tribal intonation in terms of our political culture. And on the heels of Meryl Streep's Golden Globe speech, there's this whole argument about bubbles and are the Oscars a kind of function of the bubble? And looking at it, it's sort of wonderfully not bubbled. I mean, we have these great popular successes like Arrival and Hidden Figures is this huge hit. Hacksaw Ridge was a big hit. And you could never accuse Mel Gibson's World War II picture of being, a part of the liberal bubble. La La Land has been a big success across the board. I called a few distributors to get a sense of even the little art house films like Manchester by the Sea and Moonlight have done very, very respectably. I mean, if not overperformed, they've done exactly fine in otherwise not, territories not known as art house enclaves like Boise, places where Donald Trump did well. So,
every movie you just mentioned has been nominated for an Oscar for Best Picture, which is great. We will talk about which ones you think might win, and we would like to hear from you about which ones you think might win. 410-662-8780 when we come back from a break here on Midday at the Movies. Midday at WIPR.org is our email address, our Twitter handle, at Midday Tom Hall. Love to hear what your favorites in the Oscar race might be. We will be back with you in 90 seconds. Stick around.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday.
My favorite part of that arrangement is the cupped trumpets.
I like that. I always think of Ernie Kovacs skit with the... with the gorilla costumes.
I just think of some bad cartoon, but it is hooray for Hollywood. Indeed, it's Oscar month, and it is the monthly Midday Movie Mayhem. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, my guest will be Senator Ben Cardin. There's a lot of talk about as the Trump administration completes its second week. We will have a lot to talk about, of course. We'll get Senator Cardin's reaction to the nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch, to the Supreme Court and President Trump's cabinet, including Rex Tillerson, who was confirmed as Secretary of State yesterday. We'll also talk about the travel ban that has caused chaos, consternation, and acclaim for the president. Senator Cardin will join me here in Studio A for the hour, and I hope you can join us, too, to be part of that conversation. Today, if you've just joined us, it is the monthly Midday Movie Mayhem. Our cinematic scholars Anne Hornaday of The Washington Post and Jed Dietz, the director of the Maryland Film Festival, join me in Studio A, and we're talking Oscars. So who are you rooting for? 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday at WIPR.org, and our Twitter handle, at Midday Tom Hall. So you mentioned a bunch of movies there before we went to the break, and here are the nine nominees for Best Picture: Arrival, Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, Hidden Figures, La La Land, Lion, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight. That's in alphabetical order. That seems to me like a really, really competitive list, Jed. What do you think?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, because La La Land got a very rare 14 nominations and has done very well in the award season leading up to Oscars, there's been a presumption that they sort of was theirs to lose. I think the ground has shifted a little bit on that. There's been some pushback on that movie. I think maybe because of election and stuff, there's sort of a seriousness coming in that starts focusing on Manchester or Moonlight. But we'll see. I mean, I think.
And Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures, that's a surprise hit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I would say Fences, too.
Hidden Figures, by the way, for folks who haven't seen it, is about the African-American women mathematicians who were employed by NASA in the 60s.
And again, that's another one where if you haven't seen it, please go. It's the one movie this season that I've been able to recommend wholeheartedly without condition. In terms of just, you can take the whole family, it's for everybody, you know, it's just delightful. It's a wonderful story, and it's incredibly well told in this thoroughly entertaining movie, and which just won the SAG Ensemble Award, which is often a harbinger of Best Picture, which La La Land wasn't even really qualified for, since it's mostly just a two-hander between Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, so it wasn't even nominated for Best Ensemble.
Right. Of course, you got Fences, I mean, with this performance by Denzel Washington and Viola Davis.
I would be surprised if it got Best Picture, just because it's very much a filmed play, which I think in this case is utterly appropriate, and I'm glad that they didn't mess.
And beautifully done.
It's beautifully done, but it's not exactly a cinematic movie. You know, it's really a filmed performance, which is utterly valid and legit, and I'm glad they did it that way, but I can't really see the Academy going for it, you know, in terms of it. Like, I would just be surprised if that ended up taking that particular
award. So are you going with it, just, you know, reading the tea leaves, you think La La Land with its 14 nominations? By the way, that's some sort of record nomination, right? Is it the
ties,
same numbers of Titanic and All About Eve?
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of
love. Yeah. It is a lot of love. And I do think it has, here's what it does have going for it. I think it is it's a bravura piece of filmmaking. Yep. I mean, just in terms of its love for old musicals and its kind of resurrection of that form and the exhilarating camera work and the brightly colored, you know, it's this kind of Valentine to Hollywood at its most fundamental. And I think that the industry probably appreciates that. It's a very winning movie and very winsome. It's also very emotional. And I think Jed's right. There's always this little backlash against whatever the perceived front runner is. And so the backlash against La La Land has been that it's a little shallow and it's a little superficial, but it isn't. I mean, it's actually very emotional and it's bittersweet. And there's a subtext to it that's actually quite, I thought, really kind of meaningful. And so to the degree that Best Picture goes to the movie that the Academy feels the most about, I still think it has the best chance.
Yeah. And it's interesting, your point is interesting, Jed, in that, you know, the Academy could go either way. They could say, this is exactly what we need. This is the antidote to reality, you know, La La Land, or the time is not right. It is a somber time in the minds of many people, at least half the country, given what's going on politically. So you got a prognostication? You got a guess? You
think? Well, I would vote. I mean, my guess would be La La Land for all the reasons Ann said, and because it's terrific, you know, and I think it has an informality to it, and it's a really skillful movie. I mean,
let's listen to a little clip.
Some other girl and guy would love this swirling sky, but there's only you and I, and we've got no shot. This could never be. You're not the type for me.
Really?
And there's not a spark inside. What a waste of a lovely night.
You say there's nothing here. Well, let's make something clear. I think I'll be the one to make that call.
What's your call?
And though you looked so cute in your polyester suit,
it's wool.
You're right. I'd never fall for you at all.
You know, it's interesting. They're both very good actors, and I understand Mr. Gosling even sort of learned to play the piano a little bit for this thing, but neither of them can sing all that well. I'm a person that knows a little bit about singing.
Nor are they meant to.
I know people who can sing, really sing. But does that matter? I mean,
no, you know, it doesn't. I mean, I think that's completely irrelevant to the proceedings at hand. Nope. I mean, they are not meant to be professional singers or dancers. I mean, I think the amateurism is utterly woven into the entire kind of aesthetic of the film. So it's not, doesn't, I mean, some people have had a problem with that, but if they have a problem with that, then.
I just also know there are a whole lot of folks who would like to see Moonlight win this Oscar.
Oh, definitely. I mean, sure.
Boy, are there a lot
of
folks.
Well, here's what I would like to see. If you want to ask what I would like, if they want to give that a big award, you know, if they want to give La La Land Best Picture, go with God. But I would love for Barry Jenkins to take home Best Director.
For Moonlight.
Because, yes, just because of that, again, just the pure artistry of that movie deserves to be recognized in a big way.
On the line here at midday is Ken in Ellicott City. You want to talk about a foreign movie. Hi, Ken. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, I'd like to speak up for a movie that grossed a grand total in America of $5,711.
There you go. That's twice what I made last year, Ken. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's the Australian entry in the foreign language movies. It's called Tanner.
Oh.
And it's done by a couple of Australian directors who went to this remote island in the Pacific. And they got the local indigenous, one of the local indigenous tribes to act for them. And they act out a real story. It's absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, terrific. All right. That's a good suggestion. Yeah. I appreciate that, Ken. Thanks for the call. By the way, our phone number here, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So Tana, in the running for the foreign language film, Best Picture. Land of Mine is the other. A Man Called Ove is another. The Salesman. And then Tony Erdman. So,
yeah.
You know, these are not movies that a lot of folks have seen, obviously. But
one of the, again, coming out of the culture, I mean, Salesman is an Iranian filmmaker named Asghar Farhadi. And because of the immigration thing of the last week or so, that, I think, has been now elevated inside the community. He cannot come to the Oscars.
Right.
Well, and even if he could, he's announced he won't.
Right, exactly. And there are multiple people.
But he would have been affected by that, as are some other filmmakers.
And the Iranian woman who acts in A Man Called Ove now may not be able to come or will refuse to come even if she gets a special treatment. So it's just interesting.
Life imitates art.
Yeah.
Art imitates life.
Yeah, and oddly enough, you know, Iran let him, when he won, when Asghar Farhadi won the Oscar for Separation in 2012, he came, you know, even though Iran is not really known as being particularly friendly to its film artists. So it's just ironic that it's actually the U.S. government's actions now that are
shutting this down.
Yeah.
So let's go back to a couple of the other big categories. Let's talk about actor in a leading role.
Okay.
We have Casey Affleck from Manchester by the Sea, Andrew Garfield, who is in Hacksaw Ridge. That's the Mel Gibson war movie, right? What's the war? Is it World War II?
Mm-hmm.
We have Ryan Gosling, whom we just heard in La La Land, Viggo Mortensen in that interesting movie Captain Fantastic about the guy who raises his kids in the woods, and then Denzel Washington, who really did give an amazing performance in Fences. So, Jed, let me put you on the spot. Who's going to win? Who's going to win and who should win?
Well, I think it's a tremendously good category. They're all great. I would say Denzel has got a real beat on it, given coming out of SAG, et cetera.
It's a Screen Actors Guild,
which was last weekend, right? And it's also the actors are the biggest voting block in the Academy, so that's somewhat of a predictor, not perfect, but
yeah. So of the people voting in the Academy of Arts and Sciences, a lot of them are actors, and so they can obviously have an eye for really great performances.
True. Yeah, that tends to be true, and I think up until that moment, though, it was really Casey Affleck was the front runner in this category,
and still may win. I mean,
but I mean, when Denzel won at SAG, that was a genuine kind of, I think, surprise, because Casey Affleck's been getting most of the acting awards all the way through. And I think that they're deserved. I mean, it's a tremendous performance.
Let's hear a little bit of Denzel Washington in Fences. Do we have a Fences clip?
I'm not talking about no baseball.
You're not listening to me. I'm trying to explain it to you the best way I know how. It's not easy for me to admit that I've been standing in the same place for 18 years.
Well, I've been standing with you. I've been right here with you, Troy. I got a life, too. I gave 18 years of my life to stand in the same spot as you. Don't you think I ever wanted other things? Don't you think I had dreams and hopes? What about my life? What about me?
Both of them.
Oh. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Just, it's Viola Davis playing Denzel Washington's wife in the movie. Now, she is, of course, nominated for an actress in a supporting role.
Yeah.
So I guess you can't have two lead actors in the same movie. Or is that the deal? No, you could.
There's a lot of strategy going on from the studios and the producers of the movies of, you know, trying to give their best actors the best shot at whatever award. And, you know, I don't know how well it can be gamed, but you can move people around based on.
So it would have been possible for both Miss Davis and Mr. Washington to be nominated for best actor in the same
movie.
Well,
she would have been lead actress.
Right.
And yes, they could have done. But I think lead actress was seen as such a competitive category.
Exactly.
And I think there's no question she's going to win for supporting actress. So they probably did the right thing.
And the leading actress category, we have Isabelle Huppert, who is in Elle. We have Ruth Negga, who is in Loving, that movie about the interracial couple in the 60s. Natalie Portman, who played Jackie, Jackie Onassis, or Jackie Kennedy at the time. And Emma Stone, whom we heard a little earlier in La La Land. And then Meryl Streep, the perennial candidate for Florence Foster Jenkins.
Yeah, 20 times, I think, nominated.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Quite something. Any favorites in that category?
Well, that's actually, I would have said, a few months ago, I would have said it was Natalie Portman's just going away, but I don't think that's true anymore. I mean, Isabelle Huppert won for the Golden Globes, and that was a really, you know, that was kind of a surprise, and I thought she carries that film. I was not a big fan of Elle, but to the degree that I was any kind of fan of Elle, it was because of her.
Yeah.
And then Emma Stone won for La La Land. So I still think Natalie Portman's performance deserves to be recognized. I'm really sorry that Amy Adams wasn't nominated.
Yeah,
I think
she was
Meryl Streep.
Arrival.
Yeah, I mean, Arrival, I don't know how many nominations Arrival received this year, but it was quite a few. And that's a movie that she literally carries. I mean,
yeah,
she's almost in every single scene. So for her to be left out of the nominations
seems incredible.
Shocked me. And I think she really deserved to be recognized. So I would have probably left Meryl out just this once, and maybe allowed Amy Adams to have a little day in the sun. I know.
Blasphemy.
I said it. I can't believe it.
All right. Anne Hornaday is clearly a communist and the film critic for the Washington Post. Jed Dietz, the director of the Maryland Film Festival, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's listen to a little clip from the aforementioned Moonlight, which is one of the movies not only nominated for Best Picture, but Mahershala Ali is nominated for Actor in a Supporting Role. And, of course, Barry Jenkins, as we mentioned, nominated for Directing.
What happened? Huh? What happened, Chiron? Why you didn't come home like you're supposed to? Huh? And who is you?
Nobody. I found him yesterday. Found him in a hole on 15. Yeah, that one. Some boys chased him in the cut. He scared more than anything. He wouldn't tell me where he lived till this morning.
Well, thanks for seeing to him. He usually can take care of himself. Be good that way.
You know, as a musician, I know the importance of silence. Mm-hmm. I mean, the greatest composers are the ones who use silence as well as they do sound. And I think Mr. Jenkins really uses silence, pauses, phrasing, the arc of these scenes, to say nothing of the fact that the story is incredibly powerful and the ending is unbelievably good. Jenkins, this is his second movie, and it's really a strong
film.
He
was here with his first movie, Medicine for Melancholy, in 2008, and it took him that long to make this movie. And it's a movie that no business plan would have said, make this movie. And yet it's done really well. It's exactly what you said. It's a powerful, beautifully structured movie that tells a really important story in our culture.
Yeah, Moonlight also nominated for cinematography.
Yep.
I mean, so it's in a bunch of categories. Again, we talked about it earlier in the show. This is not an Oscars so white year,
right.
But there are, you know, there's a lot of representation of African-American film artists in many categories, but, you know, it's possible that they couldn't win any. I mean, it's possible that they may not win, although do you think, Anne, that Moonlight is a front runner for directing for Barry Jenkins?
Honestly, that one I really don't know. That's kind of a mysterious, the kind of divide or the disconnect between directing and best picture is always a mystery to me. And I've tried to, I'm always, whenever I'm in the same room with an Academy member, I try to suss out their thinking on that. Like, how do you decide who gets the directing award versus best picture when they do, and often they're not the same movie. And in this case, you know, Damien Chazelle directed the heck out of La La Land. There's no question that he directed
And I should say that the other nominees are Arrival, Hacksaw Ridge, La La Land, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight. That's
right.
The directing
Those are all
category.
And they all are, you know, really superbly directed films. But, you know, when it comes to just a vision, having a vision and executing a vision, I just don't think there's any question that Moonlight is the most virtuosic in and just in terms of, you know, taking a piece of material and deciding how to attack it and how to portray it on screen and give it a visual language, and then to do that through outstanding casting, which is 90% of directing, and then just superb choices and taste and tone. I really would like to make a huge case for Barry Jenkins for that.
Yeah. Well, we got a minute or two left. Let's listen to a clip from Manchester by the Sea. Casey Affleck, who's up for Best Actor, and Manchester by the Sea, also up for Best Director.
I don't understand.
Which part are you having trouble with?
Well, I can't be his guardian.
Well,
I mean, I can't.
Well, naturally, I assumed Joe had discussed all this with you.
No, he didn't. No.
I have to say, I'm somewhat taken aback.
He can't live with me. I live in one room.
Well, but Joe has provided for Patrick's upkeep. Food, clothes, etc. And the house and the boat are owned outright.
I can't commute from Boston every day until he turns 18.
I think the idea was that you would relocate.
Relocate to where?
Well, if you look, as you can see, you know, your brother worked everything out extremely carefully.
He can't have meant that.
Casey Affleck in the scene with the lawyer talking about not wanting to become the guardian. We have a tweet from Philip who says that I saw La La Land and really enjoyed it. I think it deserves to win Best Picture despite the space dancing.
The space dancing, despite Philip.
Like I haven't seen La La Land.
Space dancing.
Although when I dance, people do often characterize it as
Philip,
space dancing.
Philip, you have no heart. And your feet have no wings, Philip.
We just got a minute left. Your feet have no wings. Thank God for that, Philip, because we like you to stay, you know, connected to terra firma. Documentaries. Fire at Sea. The James Baldwin movie that opens tomorrow at the Charles, I Am Not Your Negro. One called Life Animated, a wonderful doc about O.J. Simpson called O.J. Made in America. And another incredible doc by Ava DuVernay, who did Selma and some others, called 13th. That's a crowded category and a tough one, too. We just got a couple seconds left.
A really great category. I think the O.J. doc is hands down one of the most extraordinary documentaries made this or many years, but a great category, many great films there.
All right, Anne, let's put you on a spot about documentaries. What do you think?
I think O.J., I would like to see O.J. win. I agree. I mean, it's sort of controversial just because some people think it's just, quote unquote, a TV show, but I think it's a film. It was made as a film. Documentaries especially are often commissioned by television networks. There's no reason for them not to have a shot at this, and it deserves to be recognized.
Anne Hornaday is the film critic for The Washington Post and the author of an upcoming book called Talking Pictures. It'll be out in June, and we shall be talking about it then. Jed Dietz is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. They're going to be moving into their new digs at the Parkway Theater sometime in the spring, and we've got a link to information about the film festival and a link to Anne's reviews in the post on our website, wypr.org/midday. The Oscars are Sunday night, February 26th on ABC. And for the record, I will be wearing Dior.
Excellent.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. I will be wearing my pajamas. Our theater critic, Jaywin Russick, is up next with her weekly review. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday here on your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.